Championship Monday in the rearview mirror. Two teams are now hoisting trophies, but which one is the coolest, the most dazzling, the greatest trophy in all of sports? You can find us online at A-Law Radio or our show account at Amy After Hours, and then our Facebook page as well. Lots of pictures on both of our social media sites over the last, 48 hours, maybe even going back to the weekend. Some of you have found the new profile photo on Facebook, and I appreciate your responses to that. Didn't make it a post on Facebook, just think it's funny when people find it. Also think it's really funny when people will post on a particular interview and ask me, how do I find this interview? All you have to do is click on the picture, or click on the link that's about, an inch above where you're posting. Or the people who are asking me about the pig video and it's on the page where you're posting. Man, I can't help you. If you don't know how to navigate social, it's like making your picks in a survivor pool. If you don't know how to do it and save it, you might be a lost cause. So just go to the page and you'll find everything that you want. Go to the page. Right now, the question is about greatest trophy in sports. Just the hardware. It's just about the bling. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on our Facebook page or on our Twix accounts. Our phone number, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. And then coming up this hour, we'll get to the College World Series, the final going to a game three between Tennessee and Texas A&M. We've also got the Celtics, who were on hand at Fenway Park to be honored with their Larry O'Brien trophy, if you think that's the one. And the Red Sox honored them with a fairly dramatic comeback. So we'll get to that as well. And circle back to the Stanley Cup final at some point before we wrap up the show in our fourth hour. I want you to hear from J.J. Redick, though, because here we are, 36 hours before the NBA draft, a little more than 36 hours before that draft begins, and the Lakers are just now introducing their head coach. Not that he is unfamiliar, but it doesn't mean he's ready to be part of their draft room when he just gets introduced. Also, we think that the Cavaliers finally have a new coach. They're hiring, according to reports, Warriors assistant Kenny Atkinson. Wasn't he one of the Brooklyn Nets head coaches?
Yes, he was.
Yes. Okay. So not his first rodeo, but a lot of coaches were chewed up and spit out by the Nets. Anyway, he was with the Warriors and is now making the jump back to the Eastern Conference, where he'll be the next head coach of the Cavaliers. No terms of the deal yet. In fact, I'm not even sure it's done. The reports haven't indicated that they've actually signed on the dotted line. It came down to him and a Pelicans associate head coach, James Borrego. So there's a new president in Detroit. He was in New Orleans, so there's that tie there. But with Atkinson, you do get some experience as well. And the Cavaliers did make the playoffs last season. They actually have 99 total wins, not 99 bottles of beer on the wall, but 99 total wins over the last 2 years. So they're on the up, and they've got some good young talent. People know about Jared Allen. I love the fact that you've got a team that is on the rise and that Kenny Atkinson can get in there and kind of help push them over the top. It just matters, though, if there's a cooperation and a strong working relationship between a president and the coach. Generally, one needs to hire the other, or there's a disconnect coming in at two different times and the ownership and the power structure and all that jazz. The big thing for them, as much as the draft matters this week, is Donovan Mitchell and how do they keep him in house, their all-star guard. The contract extension for him would be top priority. He does have the option to leave after the end of next season. I can imagine they don't want that to happen. They don't want to lose him right now. He is the star power, and if they're going to attract any type of free agent or make a push, it's going to be with Donovan Mitchell on the roster as your centerpiece. And you've got an Atkinson who not only played in the league, but has been all over the place. He's actually, this is something I didn't know until I was reading about him. He's actually in Paris right now because he's part of the coaching staff for the French Olympic team. So he's not here. And this is even stranger than the Lakers bringing in a head coach the day before, 2 days before they have their draft. He's in Paris where he's coaching a different team and getting ready for the Olympics.
Zoom meeting?
I don't know. Is that how he's going to be a part of the draft? Is he returning from Au Paris in time for the draft on Wednesday? Or they just don't care what he thinks?
His opinion is just irrelevant in this matter.
Well, if you wait to hire him until right before your draft.
He's an idiot.
Well, I don't know about that. I just was saying.
KD certainly thought that.
All right. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. As I say, JJ Redick, we'll hear from him coming up next. But Alan is in Toronto and wants to talk about the Oilers. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Amy. Gary Bettman mentioned Wayne Huizenga.
Did he?
He was public enemy number one. The Marlins won the World Series in 1997, and in 1998 they had the biggest fire sale in the history of the sport. Even worse than the San Diego fire sale in 1993. So he couldn't have mentioned him. Wayne's been gone for 6 years now. He did own the Dolphins and the Marlins and the Panthers at one time. So I guess it's hard to say. I just wish he wouldn't have mentioned him. That's all, because he was hated in South Florida for the longest time.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many people actually heard it or even care in the wake of a celebration, but I'm impressed that you singled it out.
1996 was their third year of expansions, since expansion, and in the ensuing 24 years, the Panthers missed the playoffs 18 times. Mm-hmm. And the six times that they made the playoffs, they were eliminated in the very first round. So they didn't do very well in those 6 years. So
right.
It's the last 3 years, attendance has really picked up, too, in South Florida. There were 14,000 and change in 2021-22, then 16,000 the next year. And then this year they sold out every game. 18,
are you talking about averages,
so
average attendance?
You put a winning team on the ice, and it'll show up.
You're talking about average attendance.
Average attendance, yes. And
gotcha.
And they were a President's Trophy winner 2 years ago with 122 points, and they lost to Tampa Bay in four straight. But they beat Washington in six games, and that was their first playoff win since 1996. So it's
been a long time coming.
Yep.
Yeah.
And last year's win against Boston in overtime in Game 7, that's a miracle of biblical proportions, because Boston was 43 points ahead of them.
Yeah, I know. We've talked about it. What did you think about the Oilers coming from Toronto? Were you cheering for them?
No, because I've been to Florida, I don't know, maybe 25, 30 times in my entire life. I've been to Florida many, many more times than
Edmonton. So you like the state better than you like Edmonton?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't go by nationality. I go by the state, and I go by the team, too.
Oh.
And they were kind of a Cinderella team, but they were down for the longest time. So it's I just felt good for Florida.
Yeah. I don't know if a Cinderella this year applies. Last year, for sure, getting to the Stanley Cup final. This year, I think they were a bit bad, and a lot of people expected them to do well in the playoffs.
I feel sorry for Connor McDavid, because he is the Mike Trout of hockey. Superstar. Immensely popular, great reputation, but no championships. He's been in the league 9 years, and he's only had one playoff appearance in 2014. So
that's where I kind of disagree with you. I agree that they don't have any titles. That's not an opinion part. But Connor McDavid's healthy and he plays his ass off, and he's been one of the best performers in the NHL. What he's done. And now has a Conn Smythe Trophy to his name. Whether he wants it or not, he still just broke some records in the playoffs. We haven't even seen Mike Trout in the playoffs in a decade. And most of the time in the last 5 years, years, he's been on the shelf anyway. So I'm not sure that's fair. There's a lot of great players that you could say, hey, they were amazing, but they don't have a trophy. I know that Mike Trout had a couple of MVPs earlier in his career, but he spent most of the last 5 years battling injuries. And so I'm not sure that's fair to Connor McDavid.
Auston Matthews is another one, too. He's been in the league 8 years and a great reputation, superstar, and has not won a Stanley Cup.
Well, it is a team sport, as we see. Definitely is a team sport. All right, Alan. Well, I'm glad that you are smiling over the Florida Panthers.
One of the few Canadians that are smiling over it, because most of them were, almost everybody I talked to was rooting for Edmonton because of the nationality.
Yes, yes. 1993, the drought will remain now. I appreciate your phone call. Thanks so much for listening, as always, in Toronto. It's interesting to think about the Canadian part of this too, right? Because Lord Stanley's Cup does reside in Toronto year-round. Well, when it's not being possessed by a team. Although there are multiple cups. Did you know that? There are multiple cups. There's one actual Lord Stanley's Cup, but then there's replicas. Anyway, for Canada, this still is cringy because it's considered their national sport. And already we hear about it to start the season. But now to have a team get back to the Stanley Cup final and force a game seven and some come so close and yet so far away. I was saying that with Jack Michaels when he joined us. You're so close to the Stanley Cup. It's right there. It's in the building. It's on the ice. And yet you still can't touch it. I mean, that kind of that emotion of being and that feeling of being so close and yet so far away really strikes me because it's there. How often are you actually in the same building with the Stanley Cup? And it's been in the building, of course. Poor Stanley Cup was making the trip back and forth, too, with his handlers. Then I wonder if he gets a charter. Does Lord Stanley's Cup get a charter back and forth from Edmonton to Florida?
I would imagine it's not flying commercial.
Well, flying with either one of the teams is my question.
No, you can't do that.
You can't? As long as they don't touch it, is there a rule?
If I was a team, I would not want that cargo on my plane.
No?
No chance.
Why?
Because it's the Stanley Cup. It's taboo. I'm not putting that on my plane unless I want it. We'll take it on the way home.
Can you imagine if the NHL didn't tell them, just stowed it in the cargo bay?
If that happened and that team lost and that ever came out, there would be, it would be chaos.
It would be death to Commissioner Gary Bettman. Yeah. I thought it was interesting to hear a little bit about the two keepers of the cup who've been doing it for several decades now. That's their job. They keep the cup clean. They're not allowed to touch it except for with gloves. How about that? Essentially, the Stanley Cup is their pet and they don't get to touch it.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like a pet. That's a good analogy.
Yeah. You travel with it. You take care of it. It's your responsibility. You've developed a relationship with the Stanley Cup, but you can't ever touch
it. It's pretty one way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stanley gives you no love. Do you think they ever hoist it just for fun?
You'd have to at least once, right?
It weighs 37 pounds.
37 pounds?
Did you see there was one of the early guys who had the cup for Florida? I forget which one, please forgive me. But he seemed to stumble with it and almost dropped it.
Oh, my God.
It happens every year. It did not get dropped, but it's 37 pounds. Could you take it and deadlift it up?
One arm?
No. You don't deadlift with one arm.
I don't know.
They kind of crouch down as they're passing it off to the next guy because the whole idea is you have to and lift it above your head like you are holding up a WWE belt for the world to see. So, yeah, you have to lift that thing clean. So you deadlift it up above your head. Ah!
I noticed Barkov, when he was doing it, really got a nice in there with his knee, really like lifted it.
Also, something that I'm not sure I've ever asked this question before. The next guy to hold the cup, does he get the scarf? That's how they know? Did you see how the scarf was getting passed around?
I did.
I'm an idiot. These are the types of things that I recognize, but yeah.
That's not like a
I don't think
standard cup practice.
Yeah, I don't think it's an NHL thing, but no. I was wondering if it was a Florida Panther thing. Because did you notice that the next guy who stepped up to grab the cup was wearing the scarf? Almost like that's how the skater who had the cup would recognize where the cup was going next. Does that make sense?
I guess it's a Panthers thing now.
Maybe. Right? Maybe I just made it up. but it certainly did seem like there was only one scarf. And yeah, and that they were sharing it, and the next guy in line would have the scarf.
Yeah, I noticed the scarf. I don't know if that was planned or... Yeah, I mean, it was their first time ever winning, so that's maybe their thing now.
Huh. I don't know. I have no idea. Inquiring minds want to know. Okay, what is the greatest trophy in sports? I kind of like the one with the football on top. I'm not lying. But there's a couple of others that I think are pretty sweet as well. So find us online at Amy After Hours and then our Facebook page too. Oh yes, pig races are still available. Jay and I were still laughing at the end of the last shows. All dramatic, right? We're setting it up for the Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. We're setting it up for Game 3 of the College World Series. And then just because I was... slap happy coming off of the weekend and flipping the schedule, I say, but most importantly, pig racing. And then just tag out on that. Most importantly, pig racing.
Most important, of course.
More importantly, pig racing. Yeah. Have you seen the pig races? If you have seen the pig races, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's joy in watching your favorite team or humans accomplish something great, especially if it's a first for their teams. And so I love this for the Florida Panthers. They've had some, just like the Celtics, have had some pretty devastating close calls. But pig racing, that's something we can all enjoy. We love animal videos. It's one of the rare redeeming qualities of social media. So check it out if you haven't seen it. 855-212-4227, straight ahead, I swear. J.J. Redick introduced as the new head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. And no, he will not be continuing his podcast. But do you wonder if he and LeBron talked about this ahead of the time?
You sit in traffic now, but later... there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Other people did too. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Everything that we've been through as a team, on the court, off the court, just injuries, everything, like, we deserve this tonight. And we just got to bottle it up and really keep it pushing and really understand that, you know, it could be our time. Why not us?
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Recognize that voice? It's Darvin Ham. Right before they lost to the Denver Nuggets and were out of the playoffs, it's been a fairly brisk revolving door of Lakers head coaches recently. Think about it. It's 2024. Going back to 2014, Mike D'Antoni, he was in 14, then Byron Scott for a couple seasons, then Luke Walton for a few seasons, then Frank Vogel for a few seasons, then Darvin Ham for two seasons, and now J.J. Redick. So we're talking about a sixth different head coach for one of the most legendary franchises in all of sports.
Not three, not four, not five.
And actually, if you go back to 2011, I mean, I don't know why I'm stretching it, but just you go back to the end of Phil Jackson's last tenure. Okay, so Phil Jackson, he was done with the Lakers for the last time in 2011. Since then, throw Mike Brown and Bernie Bickerstaff onto the list. The Lakers have had, including J.J. Redick, eight head coaches since Phil Jackson was last in the building. Eight head coaches. What do I tell you all the time? Now, it doesn't apply to the Lakers the same way it applies to other teams because they do have LeBron James and they also have Anthony Davis and they're two of the best players that the NBA has going right now still. And LeBron, one of the best players of all time. So you take the 2020 bubble out of it and constant change equals constant losing. A lot of losing. This is a challenge for J.J. Redick. Not that he doesn't understand it, but also because of the personnel, because there are a lot of questions about Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss and what they're doing. I still have no idea how you draw the line from Dan Hurley to J.J. Redick. But according to Rob Pelinka, J.J.'s been on their radar now for quite a while.
Immediately when we sat down in Chicago at the Combine, we shared a basketball philosophy that was very similar. And it was based on high-level strategy. It was based on a certain way of communicating with players and teaching them. And probably most importantly, prioritizing player development. Really important for us to see if we could do something a little bit different. And quickly in our conversations with JJ, it was very evident that he had a unique perspective and philosophy on basketball and how it's to be taught.
All right, JJ Redick. No doubt, if you played in the league, anybody who's played in the league, and JJ did for 15 seasons, you understand the magnitude of this being your first ever head coaching gig. Whew, that's quite a steep learning curve.
Sitting in this seat, I know what the expectations are. Lakers fans have some of the most passionate fans around the world, and the expectation is a championship. And so it's my job, it's our staff's job, it's Rob's job, it's all of us to deliver a championship caliber team. That's what I signed up for.
And how do you do that would be the question. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I don't know. Let's let him answer. How do you do that? What's the vision for these Lakers?
With any player, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Austin Reeves, any player on the roster, I can have a vision for how I want to use them, but there has to be buy-in and collaboration, right? So I can sit up here and tell you how I would like for them to play, but if there's no buy-in, then it doesn't really matter.
A lot of people will make the leap and make the assumption that this is LeBron's hire. That LeBron and JJ, who have a relationship, that LeBron is the one in his final year who wants a coach in there that's malleable, that he's friendly with. Whether or not he has head coaching experience is irrelevant, since LeBron himself will be doing whatever LeBron wants to do. I mean, you listen to sports media or watch it on TV, 5 minutes, and you'll get those theories floated out there. Check out social media. So there are a couple of questions that everyone wants the answers to. How much did LeBron James have to do with J.J. Redick getting this job with L.A.?
LeBron and I did not talk about the Lakers job until Thursday afternoon, about 30 minutes after I was offered the job. And that was very intentional on both our parts. I knew I had an understanding that he did not want to be involved in this.
That's what LeBron had actually told us going back to, it was before they offered the gig to anyone, that he wasn't a part of this and didn't think he should be a part of it because he's likely only got another season or two. Most people think he'll play the one last year with his son in the league and then he's out. Peace out. And he's got nothing left to prove, of course. Maybe he still has designs on the Lakers winning a title and that's how he goes out, but he's a free agent and waiting to see what happens with the NBA draft that starts on Wednesday evening. So J.J. Redick says LeBron had nothing to do with it. They didn't even talk about it until after he was offered the job. LeBron says, this is not about me because this coach will be here after I will, more than likely. He'll be in Lakers purple and gold, even after I'm gone. All right, then. So if LeBron had nothing to do with it, how do you coach a player that's as iconic and has as much experience and championship hardware as he does?
you have to certainly get buy-in and talk to him about how he wants to play. You know, him and I have joked about this, but like, he shot over 40% from three this year. Like, I want him shooting threes. He's going to have his three or four bursts every game where he gets out in transition and does things that no one at his age should ever be able to do, but he does it.
Certainly a healthy respect there of anyone who is a contemporary of LeBron James, and J.J. Redick is in that generation, played against him. And there's no way that you don't understand what you're walking into with the Lakers, so I appreciate that he says that. Still, though, it's one thing to have this vision and to hope that guys will buy in, but it's another thing to actually implement this and to have the respect and the command of a locker room. And I'm not saying that Jeff Saturday wasn't respected by the Indianapolis Colts, but it was fairly jarring when Frank Reich was fired and Jeff Saturday comes in. I mean, yes, he's a Hall of Famer. Yes, he played for the team. Yes, he can stand in front of that locker room and say, I know what you're going through. I've been there. I've played with the greatest. Yada, yada, yada. Yes, J.J. Redick can say that. But does that mean he's equipped to coach? Well, he says this has always been the end game.
This is what I'm supposed to be doing. I mean, I have zero coaching experience in the NBA, but I would argue that I'm very experienced. And it started 22 years ago when I went to Duke and I got to play for Coach K for 4 years, spent 15 years as a player. It starts with the desire to serve players, to serve the Lakers organization, to serve our fans. It's also about competition and performance, collaboration, leadership. These are the things that drive me.
And also, it doesn't bother him if people think he's not ready or if people believe this is about LeBron James. I will say that one of the noticeable qualities about J.J. Redick, even as he's answering questions, mentally tough. Remember, he played at Duke, which means he's heard a lot of the vitriol. He's been a target since he was at Duke. Similar type of thing where you either love the team or you hate them. That would apply to both Duke and the Lakers. They're always part of the conversation every season. The expectations are sky high. So there are parallels between where he played as a college sharpshooter for Coach K, and he does mention Mike Krzyzewski, and also what he's stepping into now. It's a fishbowl. And fair or not, remember we asked the question, was it last week, I believe? For what franchises, what cities, what fan bases have sky-high expectations, championship aspirations every year, fair or unfair? And so at the very least, he's been in that situation as a player, and he understands it. And let's be fair. You drop the name Mike Krzyzewski, you talk about lessons from Coach K, it's about along the same lines as talking about, hey, John Wooden once told me. I mean, that's what we're talking about. All of these NBA guys respect Coach K. He can walk into any building. Remember, he was part of Team USA for a while. He can walk into any building in the NBA and instantly these guys would gravitate toward him and would want to talk to him, would want to spend time with him. J.J. Redick has a relationship with him, learned under him. So to me, that also provides credibility. And yeah, he's been hated, right? He's been hated from the time he was at Duke until now through his NBA career. So why would this be any different?
I've certainly heard everything. You know, it's been a really interesting 6 weeks or so. Just in terms of, you know, being part of the engagement farming industry, you know, it's been really interesting. However, I don't really have a great answer for your question because I really don't give a fuck. Like, honestly.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like a Duke thing. That definitely sounds like J.J. Redick. I mean, remember him as a player and even as an analyst. Wasn't he the one that was taking aim at Doc Rivers and telling all kinds of stories about Doc Rivers? Yeah, he's one who's been pretty open and honest and candid. And now, of course, you got to rein that in. You're not an analyst anymore. But at the same time, I believe it. When he says he doesn't give a you know what, I believe it.
That's what real men do.
Nice. Nice. So, J.J. Redick and the Lakers. This could be a trivia question one day. Who was the last head coach that LeBron James had in the NBA? And no, you can't say himself. That's not the appropriate answer. What's the best trophy in sports? Ooh, the best looking. The one that you would unleash catcalls for. I can't do it. Jay, can you do it? Catcalls?
No.
No, can we get one on tape? Because I can't even whistle. Well, right, that's not a cat call. That's just a whistle. But can you get one on YouTube?
I'm sure.
I can't whistle. It's weird that I can't generate any noise or volume trying to whistle when I have, obviously, all the volume in the world I need when I'm talking or laughing. Jay's making faces at the computer.
Ads.
Oh, you're on YouTube? There you go. The cat call. What's the trophy that deserves the cat call? Turns heads as it parades down the street or parades into an arena. Close enough.
Better.
Close enough. At A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
And the pitch. Hit high in the air, deep center field, going back on a chestnut. That's going to score the run as he settles underneath and makes the catch at the edge of the warning track. Trotting home is Burke, and Tennessee retakes the lead. Hit high in the air, deep right field. Going back on it, Sorrell at the track, at the wall. That ball is gone! Towering home run just over the fence in right field, Dylan Dreiling. Hit high in the air, that's deep center field. Going back on it, LaViolette looking up at the wall. It's off the wall and in play. He fires it back in. They're going to try to score the runner. The play at the plate. He is safe at home plate. Safe at home plate. Ansley avoided the tag of Jackson Appel.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Pandemonium in Omaha, Nebraska for the College World Series is also a part of Championship Monday, having to go back and forth between baseball and Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. The calls there on Westwood 1. Dylan Dreiling with a third home run in three games, but it was Christian Moore who led off for the Volunteers with a rope to left field, and they were off and running in this Game 3 against Texas A&M. Now, the Aggies did put up a fight. They scored two in the eighth and then two runs in the ninth and had the tying run aboard in the ninth.
Burton is ready. So is Combs. The 1-2 pitch. Breaking ball swung on and missed. He is out. And for the first time in school history, the baseball national title has a home sweet home on Rocky Top. The Tennessee Volunteers.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more rings, two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the Markable Fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Other people did too. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
everything that we've been through as a team, on the court, off the court, just injuries, everything, like, we deserve this tonight. And we just got to bottle it up and really keep it pushing and really understand that, you know, it could be our time. Why not us?
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Recognize that voice? It's Darvin Ham. Right before they lost to the Denver Nuggets and were out of the playoffs, it's been a fairly brisk revolving door of Lakers head coaches recently. Think about it. It's 2024. Going back to 2014, Mike D'Antoni, he was in 14. Then Byron Scott for a couple seasons. Then Luke Walton for a few seasons. Then Frank Vogel for a few seasons. Then Darvin Ham for two seasons. And now J.J. Redick. So we're talking about a sixth different head coach for one of the most legendary franchises in all of sports.
Not three, not four, not five.
And actually, if you go back to 2011, I mean, I don't know why I'm stretching it, but just you go back to the end of Phil Jackson's last tenure. Okay, so Phil Jackson, he was done with the Lakers for the last time in 2011. Since then, throw Mike Brown and Bernie Bickerstaff onto the list. The Lakers have had, including J.J. Redick, eight head coaches since Phil Jackson was last in the building. Eight head coaches. What do I tell you all the time? Now, it doesn't apply to the Lakers the same way it applies to other teams because they do have LeBron James and they also have Anthony Davis, and they're two of the best players that the NBA has going right now still, and LeBron, one of the best players of all time. So you take the 2020 bubble out of it, and constant change equals constant losing. A lot of losing. This is a challenge for J.J. Redick. Not that he doesn't understand it, but also because of the personnel, because there are a lot of questions about Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss and what they're doing. I still have no idea how you draw the line from Dan Hurley to J.J. Redick. But according to Rob Pelinka, J.J.'s been on their radar now for quite a while.
Immediately when we sat down in Chicago at the Combine, we shared a basketball philosophy that was very similar, and it was based on high-level strategy. It was based on a certain way of communicating with players and teaching them, and probably most importantly, prioritizing player development. Really important for us to see if we could do something a little bit different. And quickly in our conversations with JJ, it was very evident that he had a unique perspective and philosophy on basketball and how it's to be taught.
All right, J.J. Redick. No doubt, if you played in the league, anybody who's played in the league, and J.J. did for 15 seasons, you understand the magnitude of this being your first ever head coaching gig. Whew, that's quite a steep learning curve.
Sitting in this seat, I know what the expectations are. Lakers fans have some of the most passionate fans around the world, and the expectation is a championship. And so it's my job, it's our staff's job, it's Rob's job, it's all of us to deliver a championship caliber team. That's what I signed up for.
And how do you do that? Would be the question. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I don't know. Let's let him answer. How do you do that? What's the vision for these Lakers?
With any player, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Austin Reeves, any player on the roster, I can have a vision for how I want to use them, but there has to be buy-in and collaboration, right? So I can sit up here and tell you how I would like for them to play. But if there's no buy-in, then it doesn't really matter.
A lot of people will make the leap and make the assumption that this is LeBron's hire. that LeBron and JJ, who have a relationship, that LeBron is the one in his final year who wants a coach in there that's malleable, that he's friendly with. Whether or not he has head coaching experience is irrelevant, since LeBron himself will be doing whatever LeBron wants to do. I mean, you listen to sports media or watch it on TV, 5 minutes, and you'll get those theories floated out there. Check out social media. So there are a couple of questions that everyone wants the answers to. How much did LeBron James have to do with J.J. Redick getting this job with L.A.?
LeBron and I did not talk about the Lakers job until Thursday afternoon, about 30 minutes after I was offered the job. And that was very intentional on both our parts. I knew I had an understanding that he did not want to be involved in this.
That's what LeBron had actually told us going back to, it was before they offered the gig to anyone, is that he wasn't a part of this and didn't think he should be a part of it because he's likely only got another season or two. Most people think he'll play the one last year with his son in the league and then he's out. Peace out. And he's got nothing left to prove, of course. Maybe he still has designs on the Lakers winning a title and that's how he goes out, but he's a free agent and waiting to see what happens with the NBA draft that starts on Wednesday evening. So J.J. Redick says LeBron had nothing to do with it. They didn't even talk about it until after he was offered the job. LeBron says, this is not about me because this coach will be here after I will, more than likely. He'll be in Lakers purple and gold even after I'm gone. All right, then. So if LeBron had nothing to do with it, how do you coach a player that's as iconic and has as much experience and hardware, championship hardware, as he does?
You have to certainly get buy-in and talk to him about how he wants to play. Him and I have joked about this, but like, he shot over 40% from three this year. Like, I want him shooting threes. He's going to have his three or four bursts every game where he gets out in transition and does things that no one at his age should ever be able to do, but he does it.
Certainly a healthy respect there of anyone who is a contemporary of LeBron James, and J.J. Redick is in that generation, played against him. And there's no way that you don't understand what you're walking into with the Lakers. So I appreciate that he says that. Still, though, it's one thing to have this vision and to hope that guys will buy in, but it's another thing to actually implement this and to have the respect and the command of a locker room. And I'm not saying that Jeff Saturday wasn't respected by the Indianapolis Colts, but it was fairly jarring when Frank Reich was fired and Jeff Saturday comes in. I mean, yes, he's a Hall of Famer. Yes, he played for the team. Yes, he can stand in front of that locker room and say, I know what you're going through. I've been there. I've played with the greatest. Yada, yada, yada. Yes, J.J. Redick can say that. But does that mean he's equipped to coach? Well, he says this has always been the end game.
This is what I'm supposed to be doing. I mean, I have zero coaching experience in the NBA, but I would argue that I'm very experienced. And it started 22 years ago when I went to Duke and I got to play for Coach K for 4 years, spent 15 years as a player. It starts with the desire to serve players, to serve the Lakers organization, to serve our fans. It's also about competition and performance, collaboration, leadership. These are the things that drive me.
And also, it doesn't bother him if people think he's not ready or if people believe this is about LeBron James. I will say that one of the noticeable qualities about J.J. Redick, even as he's answering questions, mentally tough. Remember, he played at Duke, which means he's heard a lot of the vitriol. He's been a target since he was at Duke. Similar type of thing where you either love the team or you hate them. That would apply to both Duke and the Lakers. They're always part of the conversation every season. The expectations are sky high. So there are parallels between where he played as a college sharpshooter for Coach K, and he does mention Mike Krzyzewski, and also what he's stepping into now. It's a fishbowl. And fair or not, remember we asked the question, was it last week, I believe? For what franchises, what cities, what fan bases have sky-high expectations, championship aspirations every year, fair or unfair? And so at the very least, he's been in that situation as a player, and he understands it. And let's be fair. You drop the name Mike Krzyzewski, you talk about lessons from Coach K, it's about along the same lines as talking about, hey, John Wooden once told me. I mean, that's what we're talking about. All of these NBA guys respect Coach K. He can walk into any building. Remember, he was part of Team USA for a while. He can walk into any building in the NBA, and instantly these guys would gravitate toward him and would want to talk to him, would want to spend time with him. J.J. Redick has a relationship with him, learned under him. So to me, that also provides credibility. And yeah, he's been hated, right? He's been hated from the time he was at Duke until now through his NBA career. So why would this be any different?
I've certainly heard everything. You know, it's been a really interesting 6 weeks or so. Just in terms of, you know, being part of the engagement farming industry. You know, it's been really interesting. However, I don't really have a great answer for your question because I really don't give a f**k, like, honestly.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like a Duke thing. That definitely sounds like J.J. Redick. I mean, remember him as a player and even as an analyst. Wasn't he the one that was taking aim at Doc Rivers and telling all kinds of stories about Doc Rivers? Yeah, he's one who's been pretty open and honest and candid. And now, of course, you got to rein that in. You're not an analyst anymore. But at the same time, I believe it. When he says he doesn't give a you know what, I believe it.
That's what real men do.
Nice. Nice. So, J.J. Redick and the Lakers. This could be a trivia question one day. Who was the last head coach that LeBron James had in the NBA? And no, you can't say himself. That's not the appropriate answer. What's the best trophy in sports? Ooh, the best looking. The one that you would unleash catcalls for. I can't do it. Jay, can you do it? Catcalls?
No.
No, can we get one on tape? Because I can't even whistle. Well, right, that's not a cat call. That's just a whistle. But can you get one on YouTube?
I'm sure.
I can't whistle. It's weird that I can't generate any noise or volume trying to whistle when I have, obviously, all the volume in the world I need when I'm talking or laughing. Jay's making faces at the computer.
Ads.
Oh, you're on YouTube? There you go. The cat call. What's the trophy that deserves the cat call? Turns heads as it parades down the street or parades into an arena. Close enough.
Better.
Close enough. At A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
And the pitch. Hit high in the air, deep center field, going back on a Chestnut. That's going to score the run as he settles underneath and makes the catch at the edge of the warning track. Trotting home is Burke, and Tennessee retakes the lead. Hit high in the air, deep right field. Going back on it. Sorrell at the track, at the wall. That ball is gone. Towering home run just over the fence in right field. Dylan Dreiling. Hit high in the air. That's deep center field. Going back on it, Laviolette looking up at the wall. It's off the wall and in play. He fires it back in. They're going to try to score the runner. The play at the plate. He is safe at home plate. Safe at home plate. Ansley avoided the tag of Jackson Appel.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Pandemonium in Omaha, Nebraska for the College World Series is also a part of Championship Monday, having to go back and forth between baseball and Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. The calls there on Westwood 1. Dylan Dreiling with a third home run in three games, but it was Christian Moore who led off for the Volunteers with a rope to left field, and they were off and running in this Game 3 against Texas A&M. Now, the Aggies did put up a fight. They scored two in the eighth and then two runs in the ninth and had the tying run aboard in the ninth.
Burton is ready. So is Combs. The 1-2 pitch. Breaking ball swung on and missed. He is out. And for the first time in school history, the baseball national title has a home sweet home on Rocky Top. The Tennessee Volunteers, baseball national champions for the first time ever.
It would have been a first-time winner either way because Texas A&M was also on the cusp. You may remember game number two, the Aggies had a lead until the Volunteers rallied, so it forced a game three. But yeah, either one would have been a first-time winner. The Volunteers are also a team that was in search of some vindication because they've come close in the past, in the recent past, as a matter of fact. Going back to the College World Series in 21, they were out in two games. Then they were the national seed, the top national seed, excuse me, and they lost at home, didn't make it to Omaha because they never got past the Super Regional in Knoxville, excuse me. And so they were back in Omaha last year and won a game. They've been flirting with this now for the better part of the last 4 years, going back even to the pandemic. And of course, that was such a mess for all of college sports. But they were able to crush a bunch of baseballs and now are first-time College World Series champions. And Dylan Dreiling, he was named the most outstanding player.
I just won a national championship, so that really, I could have went 0 for 15 this whole week, and I would be just as happy as I am right now.
I love that. Isn't that terrific? What a team mentality. And I really think it applies too. If you look at the Florida Panthers, Sergei Bobrovsky, much maligned for all the goals the Oilers scored in games 4, 5, and 6, and did bear his responsibility, although, you know, his Paul Maurice and his teammates would say it's not on Sergei, but here he is kind of standing at, as the back line against the barrage, and the Oilers score 18 goals in games 4, 5, and 6. So, of course, he's got to be feeling it. People are talking about how it could have been the worst collapse in Stanley Cup final history. He doesn't win the Conn Smythe. That goes to Connor McDavid, and yet who cares? Who cares how you do it? Who cares what your personal stats are? Really appreciate that statement from Dylan Dreiling. I could have gone 0-15, and I would still be just as happy as I am right now. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Tony Vitello, the head coach of Tennessee, I think he's been in place since 17, so led the team through some of these ups and downs and the near misses of the last few years, finally able to get them to, as they say, Rocky Top, the mountaintop at Rocky Top.
We've tried to build a support staff that kind of has that image. I mean, when we first came to Knoxville, you're looking at, came from Arkansas, arguably the best fans in the league and best stadium, huge crowds, winning tradition. Florida's got in-state players. Vandy's got their niche going on. Mississippi State's facility's incredible. Coach Bianco turned that thing into a monster. Like, there's all the LSU's traditions as good as, if not better than everybody's. So, like, how are we going to compete? And that was kind of our answer when we had that long conversation.
Hmm. it is about wisdom. It is about experience. Certainly it's about vision, though, as well. And how do you implement it? Reminds me a little bit of Lisa Bluter and Caitlin Clark at Iowa and how they had the vision for how they would build it. And it certainly does take time. It takes time. It takes people to buy in. But in the case of the Volunteers, they're now on top, even though the SEC has dominated this College World Series for the last 5 years, five championships in a row, all by different schools, and 10 of the last 15. So when it comes to baseball, it might even be more competitive in the SEC than football. And that's saying something. And I know Alabama has dominated, but certainly there are other teams in the SEC. Now you add Oklahoma and you add Texas. There are other teams that have terrific traditions and programs, but it may be even a more competitive field, a more competitive conference when we're talking about college baseball. The Vols are the eighth from the SEC to win a national title in baseball, and 10 of the past 15 have belonged to the SEC. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Congratulations to the Volunteers. We'll hear from Texas A&M maybe if we can get to it next hour. Dwayne is in Detroit, wants to weigh in on the Lakers' new head coach. Hi, Dwayne.
Good morning, Amy. I just don't like this hire. First of all, I didn't like the way J.J. Redick personally disrespects the players of the past. And it's interesting that the logo died last week, and he was very disrespectful to him at times in reference. And the next thing I don't like, he has no experience. Unless he's an overwhelming leader, or that interview was so charismatic, I just can't see jumping over all these women and men that have so much experience and knowledge in the game of hoops.
Now, I would agree with you that experience can be valuable, but also would say that there are some successful head coaches that haven't had a lot of experience. Like, for instance, in the NFL, I know I brought up Jeff Saturday, but in the NFL, because he went from the broadcast booth to coaching, but in the NFL, you've got guys like Sean McVay, for instance, Zach Taylor. We could list a bunch of young guys in the NFL lately who've had success. Mike McDaniel, guys that really were plucked from, they were coordinators, they were coaches in different organizations, so maybe they're saying something there, but in terms of being a head coach, yeah, it's a whole different animal.
He has none.
I know he's got none. You're right
And unless he's a great leader or it's so charismatic, that's how you choose a person over that has experience and then a person that doesn't. They're just, some people just great leaders, mm-hmm. and they just jump in and you can't pass them up. But I don't see that in J.J. Redick. I might be wrong. I've been wrong in the past. But generally, I like people that have experience and paid their dues. Because some people have paid their dues. Women and men out there have paid a whole lot of dues coaching basketball.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm fairly certain that in corporate America, in business, even in the sports media industry, dues don't matter a whole lot anymore. Sometimes it's about who you know, or it's about the flash and the sizzle, and he certainly brings that, a lot of eyeballs, not that the Lakers would need it. Dwayne, thanks so much for your phone call from Detroit. I appreciate you expressing your opinion. Yeah, this definitely is not the norm. And isn't that what Rob Pelinka said? We wanted a hire that was outside the norm. We wanted to try something different. And so they are. And it could be a total flame out, or it could be a new revolution. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Listening to the After Hours podcast.
And the pitch. Hit high in the air, deep center field, going back on a Chestnut. That's going to score the run as he settles underneath and makes the catch at the edge of the warning track. Trotting home is Burke, and Tennessee retakes the lead. Hit high in the air, deep right field. Going back on it, Sorrell at the track, at the wall. That ball is gone! Towering home run just over the fence in right field, Dylan Dreiling. Hit high in the air, that's deep center field. Going back on it, LaViolette looking up at the wall. It's off the wall and in play. He fires it back in. They're going to try to score the runner. The play at the plate. He is safe at home plate. Safe at home plate. Ansley avoided the tag of Jackson Appel.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Pandemonium in Omaha, Nebraska for the College World Series is also a part of Championship Monday, having to go back and forth between baseball and Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. The calls there on Westwood 1. Dylan Dreiling with a third home run in three games, but it was Christian Moore who led off for the Volunteers with a rope to left field, and they were off and running in this Game 3 against Texas A&M. Now, the Aggies did put up a fight. They scored two in the eighth and then two runs in the ninth and had the tying run aboard in the ninth.
Burton is ready. So is Combs. The 1-2 pitch. Breaking ball swung on and missed. He is out. And for the first time in school history, the baseball national title has a home sweet home on Rocky Top. The Tennessee Volunteers, baseball national champions for the first time ever.
It would have been a first-time winner either way because Texas A&M was also on the cusp. You may remember game number two, the Aggies had a lead until the Volunteers rallied, so it forced a game three. But yeah, either one would have been a first-time winner. The Volunteers are also a team that was in search of some vindication because they've come close in the past, in the recent past, as a matter of fact. Going back to the College World Series in 21, they were out in two games. Then they were the national seed, the top national seed, and they lost at home, didn't make it to Omaha because they never got past the Super Regional in Knoxville, excuse me. And so they were back in Omaha last year and won a game. They've been flirting with this now for the better part of the last 4 years, going back even to the pandemic. And of course, that was such a mess for all of college sports. But they were able to crush a bunch of baseballs and now are first-time College World Series champions. And Dylan Dreiling, he was named the most outstanding player.
I just won a national championship, so that really, I could have went 0 for 15 this whole week, and I would be just as happy as I am right now.
I love that. Isn't that terrific? What a team mentality. And I really think it applies to, if you look at the Florida Panthers, Sergei Bobrovsky, much maligned for all the goals the Oilers scored in games 4, 5, and 6, and did bear his responsibility, although, you know, his Paul Maurice and his teammates would say it's not on Sergei, but here he is kind of standing at, as the back line against the barrage, and the Oilers score 18 goals in games 4, 5, and 6. So, of course, he's got to be feeling it. People are talking about how it could have been the worst collapse in Stanley Cup final history. He doesn't win the Conn Smythe. That goes to Connor McDavid, and yet who cares? Who cares how you do it? Who cares what your personal stats are? Really appreciate that statement from Dylan Dreiling. I could have gone 0-15, and I would still be just as happy as I am right now. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Tony Vitello, the head coach of Tennessee, I think he's been in place since 17, so led the team through some of these ups and downs and the near misses of the last few years, finally able to get them to, as they say, Rocky Top, the mountaintop at Rocky Top.
We've tried to build a support staff that kind of has that image. I mean, when we first came to Knoxville, you're looking at, came from Arkansas, arguably the best fans in the league and best stadium, huge crowds, winning tradition. Florida's got in-state players. Vandy's got their niche going on. Mississippi State's facility's incredible. Coach Bianco turned that thing into a monster. Like, there's all the LSU's traditions as good as, if not better than everybody's. So, like, how are we going to compete? And that was kind of our answer when we had that long conversation.
It is about wisdom. It is about experience. Certainly it's about vision, though, as well. And how do you implement it? Reminds me a little bit of Lisa Bluter and Caitlin Clark at Iowa and how they had the vision for how they would build it. And it certainly does take time. It takes time. It takes people to buy in. But in the case of the Volunteers, they're now on top, even though the SEC has dominated this College World Series for the last 5 years, 5 championships in a row, all by different schools, and 10 of the last 15. So when it comes to baseball, it might even be more competitive in the SEC than football. And that's saying something. And I know Alabama has dominated, but certainly there are other teams in the SEC. Now you add Oklahoma and you add Texas. There are other teams that have terrific traditions and programs. But it may be even a more competitive field, a more competitive conference when we're talking about college baseball. The Vols are the eighth from the SEC to win a national title in baseball. And 10 of the past 15 have belonged to the SEC. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Congratulations to the Volunteers. We'll hear from Texas A&M maybe if we can get to it next hour. Dwayne is in Detroit, wants to weigh in on the Lakers' new head coach. Hi, Dwayne.
Good morning, Amy. I just don't like this hire. First of all, I didn't like the way J.J. Redick personally disrespects the players of the past. And it's interesting that the logo died last week, and he was very disrespectful to him at times in reference. And the next thing I don't like, he has no experience. Unless he is unless he's an overwhelming leader, or that interview was so charismatic, I just can't see jumping over all these women and men that have so much experience and knowledge in the game of hoops.
Now, I would agree with you that experience can be valuable, but also would say that there are some successful head coaches that haven't had a lot of experience. Like, for instance, in the NFL, I know I brought up Jeff Saturday, but in the NFL, because he went from the broadcast booth to coaching, but in the NFL, you've got guys like Sean McVay, for instance, Zach Taylor. We could list a bunch of young guys in the NFL lately who've had success. Mike McDaniel, guys that really were plucked from, they were coordinators, they were coaches in different organizations, so maybe they're saying something there, but in terms of being a head coach, yeah, it's a whole different animal.
He has none.
I know he's got none. You're right
And unless he's a great leader or so charismatic, that's how you choose a person over that has experience than a person that doesn't. They're just, some people just great leaders, mm-hmm. and they just jump in and you can't pass them up. But I don't see that in J.J. Redick. I might be wrong. I've been wrong in the past. But generally, I like people that have experience and pay their dues. Because some people have paid their dues. Women and men out there have paid a whole lot of dues coaching basketball.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm fairly certain that in corporate America, in business, even in the sports media industry, dues don't matter a whole lot anymore. Sometimes it's about who you know, or it's about the flash and the sizzle, and he certainly brings that, a lot of eyeballs. Not that the Lakers would need it. Dwayne, thanks so much for your phone call from Detroit. I appreciate you expressing your opinion. Yeah, this definitely is not the norm. And isn't that what Rob Pelinka said? We wanted a hire that was outside the norm. We wanted to try something different. And so they are. And it could be a total flame out, or it could be a new revolution. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.